Crib Notes, things parents Google at 3 a.m.
Allergies. Okay, this is a big one for me. I've got a peanut allergy. My little niece has got one too. And I know a lot of people are really anxious about passing allergies on to their kids. One of the worst things about allergies is you think you've got all bases covered. And the most recent time that I've had a bad reaction was actually in a restaurant where we'd asked if there were peanuts in a dish. Despite reassurances, well, it turned out there were. You're just thinking, I really don't want to hand this down. So I was really excited about meeting George Dutoy, a world-leading voice in children's allergies. Sarah and I went to meet him in his office in Guy's and St Thomas's in London.
Don't forget, what's discussed today is the opinions of the individuals and not the organisations they work for.
And while we hope you find this podcast helpful, remember, this is not personal medical advice. If you are concerned, do speak to a professional.
George, thanks for coming on Crib Notes.
Thank you very much for having me.
You are the allergy king. Why are allergies becoming more common?
So the most common hypothesis is called the hygiene hypothesis, that children are now born into extremely hygienic environments and their immune system is not challenged by environmental bugs and dirty conditions. And if they're prone to allergies, they go on to start worrying about peanut allergy and other common allergies such as pollen allergy and dust mite. There's some evidence to support that, but it doesn't account for children in Africa and Asia living in squalid and very poor conditions who are now also developing food allergies at a very similar rate to other countries where this has unequivocally been noted to be on the rise.
And how can parents reduce their risk of allergy?
Common sense prevails, like with all pregnancy. You would wish upon mom a very healthy pregnancy. So healthy diet, lack of environmental pollution, cigarette smoke, as fewer toxins that she can possibly encounter, and an otherwise healthy pregnancy. Try and get your baby to term. Deliveries, a vaginal, natural, spontaneous delivery as opposed to cesarean section, has surprisingly not shown any significant risk or protective factor with regards to allergies, but there are many other health factors related to that. Once the baby is born, obviously breastfeeding is ideal, both for mom's health and infant health and for a million different reasons. For allergy prevention, breast milk alone, strangely, does not appear to be strongly protective. But we obviously still encourage that. And at least we aim, as with the WHO, the World Health Organization recommendations, for the first 6 months for exclusive breastfeeding, if possible. However, very few babies can achieve that. So from 4 months of age, many babies will become hungry. And the question then is, what do you start feeding them in addition to breast milk or the formula milk that they may be on? So here's something practical a mom could do, particularly if your kid is at risk, but all children should be exposed to this as part of a healthy weaning regimen, egg and peanut. You're better off eating these foods as opposed to avoiding them early on. And there's now strong evidence that that is both healthy and nutritious, will do no harm, but is also protective against those specific allergies.
Because haven't we been told for years that we shouldn't be exposing babies to peanuts?
Great. So that's the big paradox. We realized that peanut allergy was doubling every decade, that it was a modern epidemic along with other food allergies. And the knee-jerk reflex was, well, if we stay away from the food, the problem will go away. We just won't develop allergies.
The government told us that, didn't they, at one point?
It came out as one of the COT recommendations. The wording was somewhat vague, saying if you're at risk, and it was poorly defined, and it was saying you may wish to avoid. But that sort of washed over the population, and many people followed that. And countries that followed that, largely English-speaking, industrialized countries, North America, Australasia, and here, experienced the most rapid rise in these allergies.
Because Israel, for example, that's an area where they have quite low peanut allergy, isn't it?
Correct. So with Gideon Lack and Itzhak Katz, we set off over a decade ago looking at Jewish children in two countries. So children separated by a very short period of time in human evolution, genetically very similar. Those in the UK, 5,000 kids we looked at compared to 5,000 kids in the Tel Aviv region. And what happens in Israel is these young babies wean onto a commercial snack. It's a peanut corn snack. They can hold it very easily. They can digest it very easily. They don't choke on it. And they wean onto this very early. At around 7 months of age, many of the children have been exposed to this. At that time in the UK, children were there was a blanket guidance for avoidance. And so we were able to compare this population, and it turned out that at that period of time, there was a tenfold difference. So a tenfold greater risk if even in genetically similar children born here as opposed to in Israel.
George, I'm just imagining though, a lot of mums are probably thinking here, hang on, I'd be terrified to expose my, you know, 3-month-old to a bit of peanut.
Correct. So what is extremely
rare... 3 months is probably a bit young, but yeah.
4 months.
3 completed months. So in the EAT study, so the LEAP study was 4 months until 10 completed months of age. In the EAT study, they were a month younger than that and introduced to peanut. What's reassuring is there were no serious adverse events in those exposed to peanut early on. There was no adrenaline use in the infants at randomization. Very few reacted. And as long as you don't give them whole peanuts, which represents a risk of choking, this was a very safe intervention.
I've got a peanut allergy.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so this is
I don't think I was exposed.
Your mom would have been told something slightly different. Yeah, and peanut wasn't probably as young as you are. It wasn't probably as widely consumed as what it is now.
Can I just go back to preventing allergy during pregnancy? One of the things that we talk about is mums having peanuts in pregnancy. Would that be beneficial?
So it's an excellent question, and mums want to modify their diet both to have just a normal healthy pregnancy but also for allergy reduction. So there isn't great evidence with regards to either eating or avoiding during pregnancy for the allergy of outcome. So there's some weak designs that's showing what you eat is a risk factor and some what you avoid may be a risk factor. So what we tell mums is enjoy a healthy diet. If culturally you're peanut eaters, then you want to do this liberally and to keep that up.
If after, you know, trying to prevent your child developing any allergies, it does, you know, potentially happen and you see a mild rash to a food that they've just reacted to that you've tried for the first time or the second or third time, what should parents do?
So allergy symptoms and signs are relatively easy to identify. So the young infant who's allergic to peanut or egg will not like eating the food. They'll push it away, they'll develop an aversion, a dislike.
Sometimes they push everything away.
Yeah. But they do this with a fair amount of vigor. And then you may notice a perioral rash, like you describe, around the face.
What does that mean?
Just around the mouth, some redness and perhaps some hives, which are also called welts or wheals. It looks like a little insect sting.
That's what happened to me.
And with that, you may also get a little swollen lip or an eyelid. Then obviously, if that happens within an hour of eating a food, there should be great suspicion that this is an IgE-mediated. So IgE is the allergy immunoglobulin E antibody that causes these immediate onset reactions. Right. And you can measure for that antibody. So in that scenario, you would go to your healthcare provider, the GP, and ask for some testing, particularly because where you find one food allergy, you will often find another. So it's quite rare just to be allergic to peanut. Many of these kids will be allergic to sesame, egg, milk, or a tree nut. So you want testing to your index allergen that you suspect, but also some other foods, and you can test for that same antibody, the IgE antibody.
A lot of parents ask us the difference between allergy and intolerance. Can you explain that for us?
So allergy occurs to the protein in a food and intolerance to the sugar in a food. So allergy is a fairly easy diagnosis, as we've just discussed. It's usually immediate onset, and you can measure it either through a skin prick test, where a drop of the allergen is put on the arm and you touch lightly with a lancet. And if you're allergic, you'll develop a big wheal, or a blood test is sent off where the IgE antibody, the allergy antibody, can be quantified and measured. And of course, if you've eaten that food a few times, you'll have more of a history to work with. So that's a fairly easy diagnosis in clinical practice. What is more complicated are intolerances. So in an intolerance, the child will still enjoy eating the food or be capable of eating the food. They'll swallow it all, and then they may get delayed symptoms, so frothy stools, loose stools, bloated abdomens, back arching, leg drawing, refluxy, colicky type symptoms. And it's very difficult to measure for that. It's easier if the child's only eating one food because you can manipulate that diet alongside their infant formula or breast milk. But if they've weaned onto many foods, it takes a lot of trial and error to diagnose that.
Does this mean that some people who say that they're allergic to X, Y, Z, I don't know, strawberries or whatever, they're not actually allergic to them, they're just intolerant of them?
So the word allergy is broadly used. A very common presentation amongst all children is skin contact reactivity. So upon eating strawberries that are often high in histamine and what we call vasoactive. They cause vessels to dilate.
Right.
Vasoactive amines, they've been refrigerated for a while, and you know, the cultivars are very concentrated. If a child eats half a punnet or a third of a punnet of that, it's not uncommon to get skin contact irritations around the mouth. Is that an allergy? Well, yes, a food is inducing an itchy rash, so you can call it an allergy. So that's a mild...
I've just eaten too many strawberries.
That's right. That is a milder form of adverse reaction. Of course, you can be allergic to fruit. So kiwi fruit is a common food allergy. Kids these days are increasingly allergic to banana and avocado. Those three are related. And you can have these classic symptoms, and sometimes even more significant and worrying symptoms, which at worst would present with anaphylaxis, which is a severe allergic reaction.
Several mums have asked us, if they have had a severe reaction, for example, to fish, when their child is being weaned, is there any specific precautions they need to take?
So obviously the mum should keep herself safe in the first instance. So we see this quite commonly where a mum is nut allergic, peanut allergic. They've seen this newer recommendation, and indeed it's government advice within the US to wean your children onto peanut or include peanut in the weaning diet. So that mum would need to make sure she's not put at risk. But we can often get a different family member to feed the child to make sure that they do wipe down the peanut afterwards. And on the LEAP study, we fed them a teaspoon of smooth peanut butter 3 times a week, and that did the trick. On the EAT study, it seemed that around twice a week will do the trick. So those are 2 or 3 feeds in a week, and mom could deal with that. The exact risk, so if your mom is banana allergic, you don't pass on a specific risk. It's more of a generic risk. So it's probably more important, did your mom have eczema, asthma, hay fever, and then you pass on a generic risk for allergy. And common allergies occur commonly, so those children are likely to start with egg and milk, and then in the UK, peanut and sesame and cashew would be your next most common.
How likely is it that children are to grow out of allergies? We know that there's a variation from different foods, aren't there?
It always amazes me that young allergic infants will treat food allergens entirely differently. So egg and milk are commonly outgrown, and we consider those childhood allergies. So the typical pattern for 80 to 90% of children allergic to egg and milk is to be very allergic when they're young, and then slowly over time to outgrow this. And these are structural proteins. They have a shape, these allergens. So when the food is fresh and intact and less cooked, the shape is intact. So the food is healthier and more allergic to them. When it is baked, a more unhealthy form of the food, like biscuit, cake, and muffin, which you're not weaning kids onto, but they rapidly start grabbing them over time, they will first develop tolerance to these baked, unprocessed, rather unhealthy forms of the food, and then ultimately more regular food. Now, other allergens are not outgrown, so peanut, the opposite's true. Only some 10% of children will outgrow peanut allergy. In most of them, it'll be sustained.
10%, that's so small.
Correct. It's a very low amount. So studies are 10-15%, but I seldomly see children outgrowing it.
We know that a lot of parents go and have tests done privately. Do you think that many of these tests are reliable?
The validated antibody tests are the skin prick test and the IgE antibody test, which must be run on a system that is validated. And there's generally one system used in labs. It doesn't matter if those labs are private or NHS-based. They measure the same antibody, and if done properly, that gives you a valid result. Sometimes takes some skill to interpret. So as with all medical tests, when negative, your negative predictor value is often very high. So there's a good chance you'll be fine when exposed to that allergen. And when highly positive, again, your positive predictor value is very high. Of course, you get many gray zone test results that are low positive, particularly in children with eczema, because they have so much of this antibody in their system anyway, this IgE antibody. They're trying to determine if a specific result, say to egg, is relevant when it's low is a little bit more tricky. There are, of course, many high street tests, so the IgG antibody tests, and there are many of them in the UK and, in fact, throughout the world. And these are not valid allergy tests, and they are often misinterpreted. So within our studies, we work with IgG. It's a valid antibody. In fact, your vaccine responses are usually IgG responses as opposed to IgE, the allergy antibody responses. But the problem is these get misinterpreted by many on the high street. So they will say that a high result is something you should avoid. In truth is, it's a protective, guarding antibody. Think of IgG as a good antibody. Remember the G. The higher the value, the more I celebrate with patients. But they've often been told to avoid that food.
Moving on to treatment and management,
of allergies. How likely is it that an EpiPen is actually going to be sufficient if someone does have a reaction to, say, peanuts? I mean, I was always quite good growing up. I was always remember blue to the sky, orange to the thigh. Do you teach people that?
Yeah, we still do.
There you go. I'm so glad I remember that. Does an EpiPen most of the time, is that enough to settle?
So the vast majority of immediate onset food-induced allergic reactions, as opposed to venom-induced or antibiotic-induced, the vast majority of these reactions are mild to moderate. So they look horrific, and as a patient, you'd feel horrific undergoing this. These would be symptoms on the outside of the body, swelling, hives, a vomit, altered behavior, that usually settles on its own or with antihistamine alone. In a small percentage of patients, unfortunately, go on to anaphylaxis, which is a severe allergic reaction involving your cardiovascular or your respiratory, your chest system. So what would happen is children's voice may change. They may breathe more rapidly or with more difficulty. Or if their blood pressure drops, they will need to sit down. They'll be dizzy, gray, floppy, limp, unrousable. Often it appears they've just suddenly gone to sleep, and it doesn't always worry people in that acute scenario until you realize they've just eaten or been exposed to the allergen to which they've reacted. Adrenaline given properly into the lateral aspect of the thigh, into the big thigh muscle, the quad muscle, properly given by, there's three of these adrenaline self-administration devices now, generally will work. So it works as a form of petrol. It lifts up your blood pressure, opens up your lung, and this is a highly effective, albeit short-term, therapy for anaphylaxis.
That's reassuring, actually, isn't it, to know that most of the times that will actually work. What I'm saying, one of the big concerns for me, I think for my mum when I was growing up, was always when she took me on holiday and being exposed to different areas, different foods, different types of, you know, potential peanuts where you wouldn't expect them to be. What kind of advice have you got for parents, you know, so they don't worry all the time when they go on holiday thinking, no, I'm not going on holiday in case I expose them to X, Y, Z?
Correct. So travel is a very stressful time to families. So there are various times in a child's life and family's journey that they find very stressful. But certainly when the infant's young, very young, travel is stressful because the child isn't aware of the allergies they have. They're charming and they play with people in the seats around them, and somebody may feed them an allergen, despite even if the airline agrees to avoid, say, peanut, for example, somebody may be eating peanut elsewhere, and a young child may pick up a peanut or play with somebody who's had some peanut. So that scenario is very stressful. And there are many tips to getting around that. Now, I'd encourage folks to look up. There are websites dedicated to this topic, but the large patient support groups, the Allergy UK and UK Anaphylaxis Campaign, have very detailed points as to how to best manage these scenarios. But of course, try fly always with your emergency medicines on yourself. Carry a bespoke emergency plan that tells you when to give a medicine and which medicines to give. But those medicines must be on you. There's no point putting them in the hold. If possible, try and always carry the food with you. Try and wipe down a seat before a child sits. And in parts of America now, some airlines are allowing allergy families to go on earlier and to wipe this down. In truth is, nuts create a huge amount of anxiety in the scenario. And occasionally, nut reactions do occur on aeroplanes. But nuts don't easily aerosolize. The biggest risk from a nut for nut allergic patients is eating a nut.
Yeah.
Many of the patients, in fact, all day, 6 days a week, we in our clinics are skin prick testing nut allergic patients to the very thing they're allergic to on their arm, and I haven't seen a severe reaction occur to that. The risk through aerosolization, if a food is cooked or if many of these hot meals with the foils are suddenly opened, comes from milk, which you also can be exposed to on short airlines where they try and heat up cheap pizzas with cheese on top. Yeah. That smell can induce allergic reactions, as well as fish. So the smell of fish cooking vapor often has allergens in, and that can set you off. Those are far higher risks when traveling if allergic to those allergens compared to peanut.
That's fascinating, because I've been on far more planes where they've said to me, we've got someone with a severe peanut allergy, can nobody eat peanuts? Yeah. But actually, it's very unlikely, if not a bit of a myth.
It's not entirely a myth, because the odd reaction does occur, and it's very hard to know how that route of exposure occurred. But nonetheless, it's extremely stressful for families, and I'd just like to reassure them that with proper precautions, the risk is exceptionally low. That the average child will react to an amount of peanut that you can see. So a trace somewhere, if they licked a plate where peanut had been eaten, unless there was a significant portion on there, the risk is relatively low for most peanut allergic children. Of course, there are outliers that are highly sensitive.
The main thing is to reassure families that for example, the EpiPen is really effective. I think lots of parents have never actually had to use it. They carry it around and they always worry and don't want to travel. But actually, if they're trained appropriately and they're prepared, usually things will go absolutely fine.
That's correct. So in clinic, what's more important is to teach people how to avoid the allergen. So there are various tricks depending on the allergen. So for example, people allergic to cashew nut will often grow up eating pesto, which usually contains pine nut, and now it's quite common to have a cashew nut in that food, and then suddenly out of the blue you have a reaction to a food or a source that you used to think was safe. And so we need to educate our families in these little tricks in avoiding these allergens. Of course, then you need a bespoke emergency plan and to carry these medicines. And very few of our patients ever require an adrenaline auto-injector, of which there are now three on the UK market. Many people are most probably familiar with the name EpiPen. And if families are carrying those devices, they must be absolutely confident as to how to use them. So my analogy is, if your child is in a car, you would strap them into a child seat and strap them up properly, and please God, you would never ever need that. If they have a significant food allergy, they must carry this device with them, and again, hopefully they will never ever need that. But if you do need it, you must be extremely confident, remembering that adrenaline, young children, all humans have two adrenal glands full of adrenaline. It's a natural hormone. It's not natural to inject your sick child, but you need confidence to do so if you have to.
And if in doubt, it's better to give it than not.
Correct. You'll cause absolutely no harm through administering adrenaline.
That is interesting. So if you do use the EpiPen, you'll cause no harm at all.
Correct. And old people with ischemic heart disease.
We all have adrenaline running around our system when we go running.
That's correct. It's a natural hormone. Of course, administering the device, the harm is done through emotional harm. It's very stressful to see your mom or dad upset and teachers upset and a big crowd and an ambulance and a blue light. That component of the testing is probably more stressful than actually just taking the needle itself.
George, just a final question. People often look at their house and say, I'm going to keep it as clean as possible. But obviously, when you get kids come along, it doesn't always work that way. Sarah's got a philosophy about keeping it a little bit dirtier than normal.
Better for everyone.
Should we be keeping our house a little bit dirtier so to expose kids to more germs, to prevent allergies?
Look, hygienic environments have worked wonders to stop some really horrible diseases, but with regards to allergy reduction, it hasn't worked well as a prevention strategy.
Right.
So I would not fanatically try and get rid of every last house dust mite in your house, A, because you'll never achieve it. It's an extremely difficult task, but also the evidence doesn't support it. There's some studies where the dust mite reduction group landed up with higher sensitization rates to dust mite over time, a paradoxical effect. So I wouldn't advise that as a standard practice. No.
So it's fine to be a bit mucky?
A bit mucky.
Okay. George, thank you so much for coming on. It's been. Do you enjoy talking about it out loud?
I love it. It's my passion.
It's good. You're in the right job.
Thank you very much, guys.
Crib Notes, things parents Google at 3 a.m.
Don't forget, what's discussed today is the opinions of the individuals and not the organisations they work for.
And while we hope you find this podcast helpful, remember, this is not personal medical advice. If you are concerned, do speak to a professional.